I thought what I would do is give each member here, a person here who presented a chance, if there's any one final note that you want to tell. If not, it's fine, before we ask for questions. Micah, I'm going to start with you. If you have anything, or if you want to wait for the questions, that's fine.
Go now?
Yeah, go now. There's the mic.
Really, the only thing I wanted to clarify, that someone came up to me yesterday and asked this question, and that is what form of judgment I was referring to. Like, because there's two types of judgment that I was, I didn't really refer to both types of judgment. The type of judgment that I was mainly talking about yesterday is labeling, which is like name-calling or saying something's bad or evil, right or wrong. And the other type of judgment is more the objective evaluation of, is something harmful, hurtful, helpful. And so I just wanted to clarify that, and if anybody had any questions, because I figured someone else might have wanted to know that.
Okay.
I'll add something to what Micah just said about the power of labeling. We often make mistakes and distort things by assigning labels to them. My graduate training was largely in linguistics, and the power of labels that you can do with labels is very impressive and very dangerous. As a matter of fact, there are a lot of... Well, I discussed it briefly by talking about the true Scotsman's fallacy. It's typified by the argument over whether Mormons are Christians, for example, or whether the FLDS are Mormon. And I just went through an online argument with a Mormon over the fact that the University of Utah is now offering a course on the Book of Mormon as literature. And with a master's degree in literature that I have, I can see that the Book of Mormon is not literature in the sense that we were studying in my graduate studies. But he went on and on and on about how, yes, by certain definition from the Oxford English Dictionary of what literature is, the Book of Mormon does qualify. And we went on and on, but we couldn't agree on what the label meant, and we were mislabeling it. So be careful about labels.
To add to that, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I'm just thinking about the two that are thrown at us all the time, either apostate or anti-Mormon, which is just, you know, for Mormons, those are the two words that just immediately, you know, set somebody into a group that, you know, they feel is scary, evil, dangerous, and so it's very powerful.
Yeah, and it's deceptive because we think if we can assign a label to something, we know that we know about it. And that's, of course, not true. There were a couple of things that I did want to add that I didn't have time to yesterday, or I overlooked it in my notes. One was a fallacy that I don't think I mentioned. It was in my notes, but I didn't take the time to mention it, and that was the fallacy of willed ignorance. Willed ignorance is the fallacy that when someone that you're arguing with says, I don't want to hear anything that you have to say. And I think that we get that sometimes from Mormons. You know, would you want to know if the church were not true? Would you want to know it? No, I wouldn't want to know it. That's the fallacy of willed ignorance. And years ago, I began thinking about that, and it's really a variation on the old adage about horses and water. I think that it's if you can, I put it this way: you can lead a saint to knowledge, but you can't make him think. And I neglected to summarize yesterday when I was describing Satan and Satan's power to how to describe or recognize Satan's religion. I wanted to conclude by suggesting that the name of the church headquartered here in Salt Lake City really should be the Church of Antichrist of Latter-day Saints.
Thank you. I would only say frivolous litigation has been a misleading label and thrown out there improperly and sort of a catch-all phrase that's not appropriate.
Well, I'm sure there's a lot of questions, so I'll probably leave some more time for the questions. But the main thing, when people ask questions afterwards, I just realized, Latter-day Saints, they'll study the Book of Mormon for 30 years or whatever and find so many Semitic or chiasmic they'll find pattern after pattern after pattern and have 30 years of data thinking that it's significant. It's so important to take a step back and ask yourself, well, how does this compare? And I think it's the same with any theory. You do need a baseline. You do need to compare it against what is significant and what is not significant. And that's where my research led. I wanted to know what is significant because there's so many people saying this is a parallel, this is a parallel, this is a parallel. Well, it turns out every book is connected to every book.
Yeah.
Every book. Like hundreds of thousands of books, millions of books out there. They're all connected in a really complex way. But what is significant, and that's what our research found, and I think we found the main contributing books to the Book of Mormon, and so it's still mind-boggling to me, and I'm still trying to process it all, but it's very, yeah. So I think finding a baseline and not just finding parallels is the goal for me, is to find out what is actually significant.
Not much to add other than to thank people for what happened yesterday. It felt like someone was saying, you know, I don't think something like that could have ever happened in a fast and testimony meeting. I felt the love.
That's great. We're going to start with Micah because he has a deadline he needs to leave. So if anyone has questions for Micah, let us know right now. And if you don't, then Micah can exit if he wants to.
Oh, I would want to make one comment, then I'll take your question. The transcript for my presentation yesterday is posted to my website, lifeaftermormonism.net. So you can go through and read that and study it, whatever you reference it.
Question. I have a question. I'm just wondering, over the next year, what do you have planned in terms of life after Mormonism? Anything new coming up?
Not really anything planned at this moment. Something may come up, and then I'll tackle it at that point.
That's like what I'm doing.
Yep. Tackle it as I come.
So the people that you talk to...
Can you please use the microphone?
Oh, here.
I've got one right.
So the people that reached out to you, specifically the Bishop's family, do they do that through your website? How do you get in touch with these people, or how do they find you?
I actually found them through a mutual friend on Facebook, so they didn't come to me looking for any sort of guidance. The bisexual daughter who was in a lesbian relationship, the lesbian was also suicidal, and a friend of hers asked me to befriend her and support her. And then I just kind of found out then she was, her partner is bisexual and the daughter of a bishop. And then the bishop wanted to withdraw his financial support for her schooling and actually did. And then I wrote him an email and got him to flip that decision. And so then it just kind of progressed and grew from that. But if somebody wanted to contact me for that kind of stuff, they could do it through Facebook or my website.
What percentage of people would you say are doing their exit strategy correctly as versus incorrectly?
My first answer would be there's no one right way to leave the church. My second answer would be there's only your right way to leave the church. And so it's really a matter of finding what works for you and what doesn't. I do say that a lot of people do make a lot of the pit, fall in those pitfalls of trying to deconvert their family too soon, and then their families reject them and actually kind of push them away, or we ourselves push our families away by being too forceful in that way.
Richard, or can it be to...
No, actually.
Okay. Can you hear me? Okay. This is just a question generally for everybody, but it was Chris's presentation that kind of set me thinking about this. I think one of the questions that all ex-Mormons have is, how long, given the fact that we have algorithm programs now that can identify patterns in comparative patterns in language in the Book of Mormon and all this stuff, I feel like science is really closing in on disproving religion generally and Mormonism specifically. And so my question for all of you is, what do you see, given this fact, as the future of the church?
That's a good question. I think Mormonism is low-hanging fruit for science. It's easy. It's because Mormonism makes claims about history, about a whole continent, and that's easy. What's hard is a religion that just says, be good, and I'm a prophet, or something. You know, like, that's, how can you disprove that, I guess? They have to make some claims that we can test, and once you can start testing things, then you can start getting to the bottom of things. But as far as the future goes, I do study the future a lot, and the trends, and I do see the trend that science has definitely been shedding light on all sorts of topics, all sorts of areas for centuries, and it's really neat to see that, yeah, there's, like, for example, genetics right now is amazing. What the growth in data per year is just exponentially increasing. It's hard to even store it all on our current hard drive and storage technologies. It's just growing so drastically. I think it creates a lot of problems for traditional theories that were not based on science, because some of those theories are speculative. And so as more of the data comes out, I think more of the traditional speculative theories start to get replaced with actual hard facts. So I do see that most traditional speculative theories are going to start disappearing. And I also believe that the future of the church is, with all the trends I've seen, I mean, they changed the priesthood from, you know, the black people can't have the priesthood because they're cursed, to, oh, maybe they should have the priesthood. And it just seems ridiculous, I think, looking back, that at one point it seemed like they were never going to get the priesthood. I can't remember what time, but people in the church right now are probably, well, I know that they don't think that homosexuals are going to be married in the temple. They don't think that women are going to have the priesthood. But as an ex-Mormon looking at the trend, you see this church lagging behind equal rights, and of course that's going to change, and of course the church is going to start treating the Book of Mormon differently as more data comes out. As eventually, they've already changed it. When the DNA evidence was against them, they started to change the wording in the Book of Mormon. It was a 2007 change. They start to so they're adapting, and it's a powerful organization that does have a history of adapting, and I think they'll continue to adapt towards a more secular worldview, and I think it'll be better for everybody when they do that, because it'll be, you know, more equal, more hopefully less control. That's how I see it probably heading. Eventually, it'll be more of a maybe an elitist social club, not so religious anymore. But that's how I see it.
I, for example, as to the Book of Mormon, maybe some of you remember that one of the apostles in Ensign magazine suggested that to spread the gospel, suggest to your friends that they read the Book of Mormon and explain to them that it is not a novel and it is not history. It is the second testimony of Jesus Christ. Now, to say that the Book of Mormon is not a history book is a major change. I think that the pattern for the future has somehow been set by the reorganized, now the Community of Christ. You know, they have had female priesthood holders for a number of years. They even have female apostles. It caused a schism in their church, and they lost a large section of members, the ones that were the old-fashioned ones who oppose any kind of change. But I think that maybe that's the way it's going. The reorganites also really downplay the historicity of the Book of Mormon. I saw recently a book written by one of the, a review of a book written by one of the reorganite, I don't know if he was an apostle or a scholar, but in which he suggested that that probably Joseph Smith did sort of manufacture some plates that he showed the witnesses, but then they became sacred in the same way that the wafer in the Catholic communion becomes the body of Christ when the priest prays over it. And Joseph Smith made them sacred by, you know, the power of God. So I think that the church is probably going to be moving in that direction.
Anybody else want to answer that one? Next question.
First of all, huge thank you for all of your dedication and time for making this conference a really wonderful, open, safe place to be able to discuss our experiences, our thoughts, and our discoveries. So thank you again so much. In regards to your comments of the evolution of the church, and it's hard to put into words the direction that I'm going with this, but as I had asked last night, you had mentioned that the things that make big organizations change are when there are legal problems behind it. How can we get a legal problem going? And I know that you're bound by the bar, but Brother Packham, are you still licensed in the state of Utah?
No, I was never I was never licensed in Utah. I have a teaching certificate for Utah, but I was never licensed to practice law. I was licensed in California and Oregon. I'm still a member of the California bar, but inactive. So I can't give legal advice, and I don't
are
like to give loose
legal advice. Are any of you aware of any momentum that's going that would help encourage the church to come forth with some honesty in regards to their history of fraud and withholding information? It was pointed out to me this morning that our own Tommy Monson has not borne his testimony of the Book of Mormon or of Joseph Smith in the last 5 years, that he speaks about the testimony of all sorts of other things, but not that. And 5 years, I think that that's significant. That hit me pretty hard, that the church is noticing this change. But during the Crusades, the Catholic Church was very much in denial. And when the evidence was right in front of them to the point of, you are crumbling, and we all know it, then they finally came forth and they said, this was bad, this was wrong, and we're going to start afresh. Do you ever see that happening in the Mormon Church? And how could we get that kind of honesty for these relationships and families that have been hurt by this to be able to have it right there in front of them and let these relationships heal that there was fraud?
You bring up some really accurate and interesting points. And I think one interesting aspect of the past 20 or 30 years is the distance between the leadership and the doctrine. And agency is a really important concept here. If you think of the top 15 as agents of the church, they have been distancing themselves from the church, from the doctrine. They've been very, very vague and nebulous about what exactly is the doctrine, what do we believe, what do I personally believe, and they sort of fobbed this type of thing off on the apologists and on the lay members. And I think most of them, I mean, of course, I can't get inside their minds, but I do believe that most of them who have some degree of intelligence, and I would say that is most of them, don't want to perpetrate a fraud or perpetuate a fraud knowingly by their words. Some of them still believe in their heart, but you see that, and I think that is going to be more and more. Now, as to the question about what legally can be done, again, I can't give specific advice. I'm active in California and Utah even now. I don't see the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints doing anything voluntarily to make a really big change. I've heard rumors, and I think many of you probably have, that they're going to slowly start admitting some of the more innocuous aspects of the true history, and I think that's already happened. And somebody told me there's a 3-year plan to sort of get all the facts out there. But of course, this will be the best view of what is really true. And I just don't see it. In my 30 years of practice, it really, really does take something significant in a court of law, some action filed. It takes, the bottom line is, it takes their money to be at risk and their money to be in jeopardy before any defendant or anybody with this much power and this much influence really does anything big. That's just from my perspective. So.
Yeah, I'd just like to add to that. I guess I had a question for you also. Is what do you think about, like, because you said change doesn't really happen until finally they have some sort of pain financially and then they'll change. But one of my theories is membership, though, is also a pain point where if they're losing enough membership, I think they would change. And I think that's happening right now. I mean, people are leaving in by droves right now because of the inconsistencies between what is taught and what the facts seem to be, and so people are very upset, and I think that could cause change.
Yeah, if I can just respond to that, that's true. I blogged on the Trinity College study in December of 2012 versus the Pew study that polled Mormons and had their opinion on whether they were happy with the church, whether they were active, etc. The Trinity College study, Trinity College is a Christian private university back east, and they found that young men especially were leaving the church in droves and that the scales were tipping so that there are more women in the church and that it was really a significant problem, as did the church historian who recently was replaced about a year ago. What was his name?
Marlon Jensen.
Marlon Jensen admitted basically that we're having the worst apostasy since the days of Brigham Young. And I think, Chris, you've made a really good point on that will hit them in their pocketbook. It will, and it may, you know, be happening even now. And one thing I thought when I wrote An American Fraud, I've had cases published. I had a Supreme Court case, Utah Supreme Court case, a really good case on therapeutic radiation and injuries, and nobody reads that stuff. Unless it's in the popular press, you can win big, you can win whatever and have really good opinions, but unless you're a lawyer, you don't really read those opinions. And yet if you write about it and you write about the law and people read, then they start to wonder and they start to question. And so in a way, I feel like I'm teaching people with my book and everybody who's contributed here, Richard's website and all the things that are being done by all of you, that's almost as effective, and maybe that's the way to go, as opposed to a lawsuit. I don't know.
Hello. I'd like to thank the panelists, the presenters, and those that put on the conference. I've really enjoyed it. This is my first conference I've ever attended. I was raised by a very scholarly father, and a mom too, but that knew the church doctrine really well. He was a twice bishop. And there was a lot of times that I wasn't sure that it was church doctrine that he was sharing with his children or his own personal take or revelation. And the one I wanted to ask about is, I remember him sharing a few different times that in the last days that all organized churches are going to be crumbling, and that was part of what it was going to look like when we all became one in heart, or the Zion people, that we're going to be like all Christ followers. And I've seen this happening for a while because I always thought it was revelation, but I asked different friends, peers that were ex-Mormons, if this or this or this was church doctrine, or if it was societal LDS doctrine, or my dad, Don Borrego doctrine. So have any of you heard of this phenomena that in the last days all organized religions will fall apart and there will be a mass exodus out of them? Because I'm experiencing that, and I have
I live in Sedona, and I have friends of all walks of life that have left the Jewish faith and Catholicism, Seventh-day Adventist, Jehovah's Witness, Mormon, whatever. And we're all on the same page of living in love, peace, and joy. So we're like the new tribe that's coming up. So have any of you heard about that happening in the last days?
It sounds familiar to me a little bit, but I can't speak for the church's official doctrine, but I do see a trend over the last 100 years towards secularization, and it's a slight trend. I mean, it's not like as dramatic as maybe some people would like, but there's a slight trend towards that, and I think it's just science takes time to change hearts, because it's not maybe that exciting sometimes as the data comes out, and it takes time for traditions to change. But that's the trend that I've seen. But I don't know about what the church is predicting or what prophets are predicting.
Yeah, well, he's not alive to show me where it was, you know, in Scripture. But if he was, he could show me. But he led me to believe that it was in Scripture. So that's why I'm asking.
Well, there's a lot of stuff in Scripture about what is going to happen in the last days. And, of course, ultimately, the Mormon doctrine is that ultimately the entire world will be ruled by a Mormon theocracy. I mean, did any of you see the interview on television of Mitt Romney when he was a candidate for the presidency, and somebody asked him about the last days, Romney was explaining with great enthusiasm and conviction about how in the last days there would be the Jerusalem and the New Jerusalem, and the civil law would come from the one Jerusalem, and the religious law from the other Jerusalem, and the whole world would be... And he got almost wild-eyed with trying to convince the reporter that this was going to happen. So now that maybe was Mitt Romney's personal prophecy, but it rang a bell with me. I mean, it sounded, hey, yeah, he's a good Mormon. Yeah, that's what the Mormons believe. So whether it's, and of course, maybe it's just the implication that if the Mormons are ruling the world under Jesus, of course, who will be here, if the Mormons are ruling the world, that means that the other churches are just going to have to disappear. And so maybe that's what your father was referring to.
Just a quick note on that is, you know, the last days, from what I understand, have been, 180 years has been going on. Is that right? Last days, latter days. The
real last day is tomorrow.
Oh, okay, yeah.
It's coming.
I would just like to add that I really think that education will expedite this, and since the internet was invented in 1994, it's just been exponential, and the more people read, the quicker this will happen, and I do believe it's happening. That is, people are leaving organized religion in favor of being spiritual, moral, ethical, and having a higher power within, believing in some source of humanity and believing in the good in people. And I'm hopeful that that will continue.
To add to that, I like to study history, because I think history is an instruction book for the future. You think back about the Protestant Reformation and what really triggered the Protestant Reformation, and which really did a number on the authority and power of the Catholic Church, and it was the invention of the printing press, when printed materials and books were more easily available. Until then, of course, a book had to be copied out by hand, and only the very wealthy could afford books. It was a precious thing. And information, what people learned about religion and history and so on, they they learned by their ears in church with what the priest told them and looking at the pictures on the walls of the church and the stained glass windows. But the printing press changed all of that. All of a sudden, people could have access to all kinds of information. And that was a destructive power to the Catholic Church. And I think it's a lesson for us in two ways. One, the Internet is doing that now to not just to the Mormon Church, but to all churches. It's providing easy access to more and more people of information. And so it's going to cause a number. The other thing we need to learn is the Catholic Church is still there.
Well, at least from... You want to ask a question, Jean?
Well, I need to make a comment related to that, otherwise we'll lose it, because it segued really nicely into it. You remember when Martin Luther pinned that thesis to the door of the Catholic Church and said, these things have to change, you know? We can't live with this. We've changed the gospel. And that's kind of what people are doing today. And so online, there's that 95 theses, and somebody very kindly donated a lot of copies over there, and I want you to take them with you. They're on the end of that table. I don't know how many are left. There's quite a few by the looks of it. And so take them along and have a look at them and run them off and pass them off to your friends if you want to, but at least there's some information to share. Thanks, everybody.
Questions? Are we asking questions yet or no?
Still answering.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say about information, what Richard was saying. At least in my opinion, the information that's available is not only increasing in its speed, but it's increasing in its accuracy and the organization of that information. One of the memes, or you could call it a meme, that seems to be going around is, I'm sure some of you have seen the... sort of exit essays that have been going around, and they seem to be improving and evolving and getting better and inspiring others to do the same thing. And so people are kind of beginning to feel like, hey, I'm empowered enough that I can actually remix, you know, everything is a remix, and just remix all of this information for my family, and I'll make my personal statement by just collecting all this information and putting my own words. And that's the state we're in now, where it's like the information is so easily available. People are feeling empowered to be able to collect it and make their personal statements so they can say, hey, you know, instead of go to this anti-Mormon website, go to this anti-Mormon website from a Mormon perspective, right? That's kind of what we're doing when we say, here's some information that I think might be relevant to your entire belief system to just consider. But it's like, no. So these people are saying, well, here's a way I get around it. This is... my personal struggles, I compiled this list, you know, and that's kind of what's going on. We're organizing it better. It's becoming more accurate and the speed is increasing.
Uh-huh. Actually, I was going to ask Will to get the lights so I could put that sex tape up on the screen, but forget it. Thanks. No, actually, this is actually for Will, but... before I ask Will a question, kind of ties into Kay's thing here about all religions going to the shit and all that. FYI, I know it seems to me, and I could be wrong, 60-70% of ex-Mormons tend to be atheists or whatever. There is a percentage that's not. You know, there's 25-30% that, there's even some that consider themselves Christians, literally like born-again Christians, maybe 10%, something like that, 10-15%. But there's also a lot that have some resemblance of religion in their life. I personally would highly recommend anybody even slightly interested in religion to investigate the Unitarian Universalist Church. I personally go every Sunday. There are many atheists there. I personally am not an atheist, but I sure as hell am not a Christian either. I don't believe in zombies coming back from... Anyways, but, so that's the long story short. Check out Unitarianism if you haven't already and you have any interest in religion whatsoever. My opinion, Unitarian Universalist Church is the only true church on earth. And I say that facetiously, but I also mean it because there's like no religion there. It's just like basically just love people. Could be don't be a douche. Love the earth, love your neighbors, and that's it. We don't care what you believe. It's fantastic. And they have coffee and donuts. My question actually is, it's not so much a question, but well, sort of for Will. A lot of people may not know this, but William is, my opinion, he's a freaking genius, honestly. William has done things that some people may not be aware of, and this is not a cheap shot to promote my channel, but I have two videos on my website, on my YouTube channel, that Will has made that aren't necessarily in tune with the I Am an Ex-Mormon video series. So occasionally Will make a masterpiece and say, here, you put this up. Well, my question's getting the wheel here, but the two things you got to watch are Hank and Marie. What was it called again, Will? It is Hank and Marie. Well, the first one was actually Mormon Temple the Musical. You have to watch a video called Mormon Temple the Musical, which Will made. It is brilliant. It's lip syncing. You just have to watch it. My question for Will is, are you going to share anything about a future project or projects you're working on that also I think are ingenious, but you probably will not release on your channel? You know what I'm talking about. He has something in the works that's brilliant, in my opinion. But I don't know if a lot of people are aware of it.
No. Should have been more to the point, Mike.
Okay, I've got a legalese question. A number of people, when they resign, well, there's two ways you can get outed. First of all, you stop showing up on the ward list, which makes it obvious if you were known in the ward that something happened. And the other is at tithing settlement, sometimes the bishop will show your parents the record, and that includes the children's names and the children's ordinance dates, and your ordinance dates are gone. Seems to me that your membership, once you're an adult, is a private matter between you and the church, and it's nobody else's business, including your parents, and the church has no business revealing that information, and they're causing damage to your family relationships when they do that. And my remedy would be showing up in the ward directory is your call. They don't automatically put everybody who's a member in. You should have to ask permission to be in the ward directory. So that if you're not there, that doesn't necessarily mean you're not a member. And secondly, they should stop putting ordinance dates. I've heard they have stopped doing that, and I think it may be Kirtan McConkie said, you've got some legal exposure here. You should stop doing that. So I'd like your opinion on that.
Oh. He said, that's mine. That's
it.
Okay. The big problem here is that the church, of course, is a private organization, and there's a lot of leeway given to private organizations that aren't accepting government money and government donations, and they can pretty much do what they want. That's really all I have to say on that.
My understanding of European law, in the European Union, the privacy laws are much more restrictive as to what or any organization can do with personal information. And my understanding is this is not that serious a problem in Europe. It cuts two ways. I remember very vividly a fellow that was an ex-Mormon, very active among the ex-Mormons about 10, 12 years ago. And he resigned from the church. His mother was still an active member. He resigned from the church and was very vociferous about not wanting his name to be on the church records at all. And then he discovered that on his mother's church records, it showed that he was not, he didn't exist. And he was angry because the church didn't know that he existed. And so, you know, you had to ask, well, what is it you really want? You know?
I have a question directed to Kay. It's outside of your area of expertise and may require speculation, however. there are certain guidelines for charitable organizations, churches, where they have to, for compensation for the leaders, they have to be reasonable within our culture for payment.
And in order to be tax deductible, you mean?
Yeah, to qualify as a 503C.
Right.
Yeah. However, if this organization doesn't, it keeps their finances private, an individual or even the IRS can't really compare what they are getting paid to the guidelines. Is there any way to, for an individual or even IRS, to get that information to compare it to the guidelines?
You know, thank you for asking that, and it's a great question, and it is outside my area of expertise. I have a feeling, and this is, again, there's very little foundation for this. This is mostly based on hearsay, but that some attempts to do just that have been made in the past, although the IRS has got so many more other things that they're preoccupied with, and there's also a lot of LDS IRS agents. So I don't know. I don't know that that would ever happen here. It should happen here. And as Richard said, in the UK, and also a gentleman last night pointed out that in Canada, there's a lot more transparency relative to financial disclosure. But I just can't answer that. I'm sorry.
If I can add a comment to the Canada, from this is information that I've gathered, which may or may not be terribly accurate, but from what people have written and speculated, what's the church reports in Canada, they filter that through certain organizations in the U.S. For example, oh, that's a donation now to BYU, and then BYU uses it, however, and so it appears that the church is shifting money around to qualify within Canada's guidelines, but and reporting it, but it's donated, and then is filtered to the U.S., which they shifted around. Anyway.
Of course they are.
Yeah.
I'm not certain about the information, but I was given to understand that my home state of Oregon, which was where Sue and a number of us are from, has passed a law requiring that any charitable organization which is telling its donators that its donors that they are using the money in certain charitable ways has to open its books so that people can actually see how much of the money is going to the actual charitable purpose. And I think that the LDS Church was opposed to that.
Well, yeah, and of course, we all know that federal tax law is just that, it's federal. But along state lines, there's also each state has its own tax laws, and that's wonderful. And Oregon is very progressive in a lot of ways, so that's great to hear.
I can just add to that, I do have an acquaintance in Canada that was studying the way that the church was moving money around in Canada. Requires the information to be fairly open as opposed to the United States. And so they did, he was studying that and he left the church because of some of the financial things that were going on with donations. And so it was kind of a big concern for him. I mean, it was a number of things adding up, but that was one of the things that made him finally leave. And I think, Will, do you have more to add to that? Or?
Yeah, from what I understand, there were some donations that were given for Haitian victims, and it turned out that all the donations
because of tax laws, weren't able to leave Canada, and they were not going to tell the members that had donated that all of their money were not actually going to where they were supposed to. And anyway, so this person was kind of upset and tried to remedy things with at least to be honest with people to say, no, I think we should be telling them that this isn't going on when we told them one thing. And so anyway.
So this explains why the tithing receipts have changed. Because now nobody, even if you wanted the money to go to a certain charity, you used to be able to put some designation on there, and they're covering themselves by not allowing the members to do that anymore. So you have, as an individual member, you have no, you know, right to find out.
That's right. And I would just like to add, someone last night made the comment that they're wondering whether the church's legal counsel acts preemptively or if they just are reactive to things that have happened to them. And in my experience, any big entity, any big corporation that has the number of attorneys and the resources that the church has does both. They anticipate problems and then they react as well.
So, as the church is doing all their little mamby-pamby changes over the next years or decades, we are all collateral damage, and our families are. And I have an 83-year-old mother who, after the papyri were discovered in 1967, they were sent to BYU with Hugh Nibley. He wrote the Ensign articles. After 2 years of that, she said, "This is smoke and mirrors. This was years ago." And she's still married to my father. He's what we call Nazi Mormon. And she's an atheist. She still wears her garments. She still goes to study group. She still does everything to keep the peace. But she is collateral damage, and she will pass away as less than in his eyes, which breaks my heart. But there is a lot of anger in families and in us as individuals as things change so slowly in the church. We are just being passed over. We're not going to have any kind of a conclusion or an end to our feelings. And I'm just wondering from you, what do you think is the best way to channel that energy, that us wanting? I mean, this is all we have. We are it. We are each other's solace. And how do we help you? How do we help Sue? Where do we go to put this energy into something that is progressive and positive so that we can, maybe we don't see anything big coming from the church, but maybe helping each other is, I mean, if I would hold the camera for you, Will. I would, you know, I would set up. I would do the setup and the breakdown, you know, whatever. How can we help? I'm an artist, and I don't know if anybody would be interested in this, but a blog or a website on post-Mormon or post-religious art and poetry, music, because you're here. You know, where is our heart? They need to know that we still have a heart, that we still love beauty and music and poetry. And so do you have any guidance or help or any direction that you know of that we could all participate in somehow?
You brought up a lot of really good points. I think there's a big sense of loss of community when people leave, and there's also a lot of anger, and I think the Mormons or the Latter-day Saints, they'll look at us as evil because of our anger, but the anger passes, and then after the anger passes, we look for meaning and where we reorient, and just like Michael Norton said, you know, there's a certain percentage atheist, certain percentage Christian, certain percentage still religious. People are looking for that community and meaning in their life still, and it's beautiful to see. I see all these people here today. This is my first time at one of these conferences, and I just love seeing the intelligence and the courage and the beauty of the people. I remember growing up thinking, oh, those anti-Mormons, those people are so evil. And we are told to view people in a certain way. But when you actually meet them, you realize they are amazing people and with such good hearts. And so I really resonate with what you say. We want to pursue good, and we want to make the world a better place. We want to pursue beauty, poetry, art, and that's what religion is. Religion is an expression of all of the art and music and beauty, and for centuries, people have been building up that body of art and knowledge and tradition. And I think there's a sense of loss there, and we want to fill that. And it's for me, I was just too addicted to the truth, but there's still value in all of those things, ethics and beauty and all those things and I agree, we don't need to leave those things behind. I don't think it's probably the ex-Mormons per se to do that. I think there's a larger community called humanity that is doing that.
Your question is really, what can I do, right? I don't know if my personal recollect or experience is of any value, but when I left the church over 50 years ago, I figured I was the only one I was the only person I knew that had ever left the church, and that was fine. I was doing my thing. And I wasn't involved with Mormonism or ex-Mormonism at all for a number of years. And it wasn't until I kind of followed things in the national news when something Mormon would come up, you know, like when they discovered the papyri and when they published, anyway, my point is this. I figured that my problem with the church was an intellectual problem. I just realized that it wasn't true. And I had some personal family problems, losing my family over it. But I was able to deal with that. And I had no plans to do anything at all. I wasn't going to try to go out and get even with the church for destroying my family, because I had gone on with my life. I really had. And then the internet came along, and you know what? When you get your first computer and you get on the internet, well, you can. There's these things called search engines, and I wonder what there is out there. And so I did a search on ex-Mormon, and I found an ex-Mormon discussion group out there. It was the one at Institute for Religious Research. It was a Christian website, and you could get on there and you could talk to people, other people who were ex-Mormons. Well, these people were ex-Mormons, so they were also very, very devout Christians. So I really didn't fit in, and then I found a group that was not necessarily Christian, and you know, it was kind of interesting, and I realized there were all these other people out there. I still had no ambition to change the world or bring the church down or to deconvert a bunch of Mormons, but I noticed that. Nobody had really summarized what some of the problems with the Mormon Church were. And so I wrote up a little list and posted it and got some nice reactions. And then I wrote up, I've got some information, I checked out some, I found Joseph Smith's prophecies to be interesting because none of them were fulfilled. And so I made a list of those. I posted those. And that's how it began. And that was 15 years ago. And I had no intention of influencing anybody's life or changing somebody's life. I just wanted to express, to share what I had found. And over the years, it's been amazing the number of people who tell me what started by that, just wanting to share something. How many people have told me that it's changed their life for the better? And if I can do that, you can all do that. That's my answer to your question.
My question kind of, after watching Elder Uchtdorf last week, my first guttural reaction was, what a load of crap. I felt it was a truncated talk. You know, there are valid reasons why people left, such as, doesn't name them. You know. But I truly wonder, my wife yesterday morning was at the temple. When I went home last night, I talked to her about Richard's talk about the Mason, the similarities and such, and it just could care less. those of us who find that stuff interesting, Book of Mormon things and like that. I mean, no, I'm a historian. I went to graduate school in Latin American history at Tulane, but I find. But one of the things that I think, Will, that you're helping with is, and maybe Elder Uchtdorf, even though it was my first reaction was, okay, whatever, you know, a lot of people were saying, a lot of people inside the community were saying, oh, what a great talk. And now I've kind of come back to thinking, you know what, maybe it actually is. Because maybe what that's going to do, we've asked, what can we do? And I think that one of the things that it's going to allow us to do is be emboldened as we are hopefully less ostracized, less marginalized. Friday night, I participate on one of the boards. Of course, I use a pseudonym. One of the interesting little things about newordermormon.org is that you're allowed to list your ward if you want. I got an email Friday night from someone who said, I've lived in the same ward as you. I don't know who you are. I don't know if I dare tell you who I am. I've gone through these things and then said who he was. And at first I felt, you know, damn it. For 3 years you lived 5 houses away from me and we couldn't talk. My wife, on the other hand, although she didn't come right out and say it, I know her reaction was, him too? Like, wow. And I think so maybe, I'm just wondering what you think, is should we maybe embrace Elder Uchtdorf's talk and use that as, you know what, maybe this will embolden us, because maybe it will be okay for us to say, you know, look at me, I just don't believe anymore. I love you guys, but I don't believe anymore. And in that way, they've opened the door, actually, you know, because a lot of people are never going to buy into the science. They just don't, they don't care. You know, they don't give a damn about the DNA. They don't care about the other things. But the fact that one of their leaders may have opened the door for us, maybe that may be the actual thing that effectuates change and allows us to, because I guarantee there's got to be more than just one person that lives 5 doors down from me that's wondering and needs, and we need to be able to network. So maybe we need to, you know, at some point we won't need to use pseudonyms online.
So I think the thing about Uchtdorf's talk, though, is from the members' perspective, true believing members' perspective, the door that's being opened is the door that says, come back, right? And what I saw on Facebook was immediately, it was most of the true believing Mormons who were posting about Uchtdorf's talk to all of their lost friends that you need to come back, right? But that kind of speaks to community and why some of us feel a loss when we leave that community. It helped shape a lot of our identity growing up. And, you know, singing in a congregation, just doing things with a community is wonderful. And that's why, you know, this is my first time coming to the Ex-Mormon Conference. I've been out of the church for 25 years, as I mentioned the first night. And it was just this last year that we, my wife and I, have discovered there are others out there like us. I live in Utah Valley. And I thought no one in Utah Valley would dare leave, let alone share that with others. And I think you're right, Richard, that it's in the sharing. And William, this is kind of what you're about, sharing of your personal story. And the web, which actually was invented in 1989 by Tim Berners-Lee, but it became popular in 1994 because Netscape and AOL, yeah, AOL, that wasn't the
Thank
one.
You.
But it took off because it is the new printing press. It is not just for publishers, for every one of us to share. And the brilliance of Facebook, I know a lot of people swear it off, but the brilliance of Facebook is that a lot of people are there. There's a lot of ears, and you find out who's connected to whom. And you, when someone sends a friend request to me, one of the first things I look at is, well, who are their friends? And yeah. Yeah, yeah, so, you know, I mean, there's going to be trolls. There's going to be people who take advantage. But the internet, the web, is just kind of accelerating everything. And Chris, in your world, the world of science, the pace, rate and pace, and it's all about sharing again. But in this case, it's sharing content and knowledge, and it's just taking off. Nah. Okay. No, I guess it was just a comment that it really is. I'm just echoing what a lot of other people have said, that it really is about sharing and finding community. So for those of you who are in Utah Valley, this is an advertisement. There are communities that you can't find because they're secret groups in Facebook. If anyone wants to find some of those communities, I know where they are. And we connect in an anonymous way. We know each other, but no one outside knows that we're in those groups. So it's possible with technology to actually find communities. Thank you.
So, I have a question, yes. So, I never went through the temple, so I have a little... It all seems so silly to me. So, just at the veil... Are there holes cut through it that you reach through? Like, how big are these holes? Like, just big enough to stick your hands through? It was not clear enough.
Yes, there are holes in the veil through which the Lord extends his hand. When it was the 5 points of fellowship, your hands and arms went through the veil. In previous years at this conference, I've occasionally done a demonstration complete with veil and a portable veil, of course, and costume, the robes and everything for those. And I do the pre-1990 demonstrations, so maybe we need to do that again. sometime. Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Any more temple questions? You know, I'm sworn to secrecy, though. You know?
I won't tell anyone.
Okay. I have a question about having your name on the church records. And I walked away in 93, and I resigned officially in 2002. And then several years ago, when my daughter was still living with me, a ward roster appeared on my doorstep. And I thought, well, I haven't looked through one of these for a long time, and found my name in there with a star by it. And I think the star means he's a bad guy, so just so you know. My daughter's name was in there, too, which kind of bothered me, but it really bothered me that they had her birthday. And in this day and age, you know, that's a little bit of an exposure in terms of your private information. Kay, is there, should that still be the case, is there any legal basis for me going to them and saying, take it off, you know, I'll sue you if you don't?
I know this is for you. I just want to add that happened to me, too. Okay. My name and birth dates and everything was just, they just put it right there, and it's kind of a privacy concern because somebody could come by and just see my information.
Right.
I didn't know if that was really appropriate, but yeah.
Here's the best way to deal with something like that, and this is just a general piece of advice, but of course, nobody wants to sue anybody over something like that, but
yeah.
I would just send a letter saying, I find that this violates my right or my daughter's right to privacy. You don't have to do anything, and say, if you don't take this off within 10 days, I'll contact my attorney. And please confirm that you've done this and have them send back a letter. And usually, in my experience, that is enough to have them take some action. Okay. But it's not that they're required to necessarily, but they're not going to fight you if you really show that you're serious.
Would you explain why they're not required to? Does that have to do with the...
It would take too long, and I'm okay. Sorry. It's right. Just, yeah. Come okay. See me at my office.
All right. Thanks.
Also, just to add, I don't think they're trying to do anything harmful. We're, you know, yeah. We're all a little angry, at, perhaps, of you know, being deceived and everything, and that's understandable, but I was just concerned with if a credit card company did the same thing, you know, if they left my information right there for some stranger to come by my house, grab my information, and then, you know, identity theft could happen. So that was my concern, and I think that's a valid concern for any organization. So I just want to add to that.
A wonderful discussion started happening yesterday when I was out in the foyer talking with some people, and I wanted to bring the question up to you guys. The future of the Mormon faith and church. Obviously, there's more and more information available, and the momentum of those leaving the church is increasing. What are your thoughts on what's going to happen? And maybe where? I mean, just thought. It's just obviously this is conjecture and everything, and But it is an interesting thing to think about, and perhaps maybe what would you like to have happen? I mean, for instance, if we, if somehow the Mormon faith in at some point in history just goes down to the point of there's very few people who are in the church anymore or are active, and they have to sell off their buildings or they have to do, how would you like that transition to take place?
Well, Tom, I think we talked about that a little bit before you came in the room, and you missed it. So ask somebody to go over it, to review it for you. That's all right, because it is a good question, and it's a question that's on all of our minds. What is the future going to hold for us? You know, and by the way, just, you know, you need to read your patriarchal blessing.
I didn't introduce myself earlier. My name is Valerie Borrego. I'm from Sedona, Arizona. And there's a group of Steve Lowther, the one-eyed Willie walking around, and Jamie Johnson that's already flown back to Phoenix. The three of us are heading up a spring gathering. It's April 18th through 20th in Sedona, and it's at Chavez Crossing.
It's right next to Poco Diablo Resort. This conference more is more like left brain logic stuff. Ours is going to be more right brain creative stuff with playing in the creek and talking circles and drumming and just the adult child in us enjoying each other. And so, and Exmo Expo on Facebook. And then I've got cards in there. I think there's maybe Steve's cards are still up there. I've got some cards if you're interested so that you can stay in touch with us and find out more as things unfold. Possibly Steve Benson will be speaking. Janice Romney, she's an author, and James Burrell. Those are three of the people that we have lined up. And if you have any more questions, just come talk to me. And thank you so much for letting me make that announcement.
Is the clothing optional?
Probably. In Sedona, probably, since we're on the creek.
I'll see you there.
Not to scare you. No, it'll be different than this, but like I said, it'll just be more of an intimate setting. So it's our first year, so we're up for suggestions for what you would like to even do or conversations you'd like to have.
It just occurred to me that no mention has been made of the sister organization or meeting in Atlanta, Georgia this weekend of fellow ex-Mormons. They were planning to stream our presentations, I think, and we're hoping to send us greetings or we had anything? Oh, okay. Well, if Atlanta is listening, welcome everybody in Atlanta. We're sharing things here.
Yesterday, a video clip was played, for lack of a better term, of the Holland rant, and I had heard of the speech, but I hadn't seen it, and I was a bit surprised at how angry he looked. And my question is, could anything in his sermon be, well, number one, I considered most of what he said to be false, but could anything in his sermon be considered fraudulent, a fraudulent statement?
Well, I believe I know what you're talking about. I think it was 2 years ago in conference. I didn't see this part of it, but and I can't recall it verbatim, but I think he is very careful. He's a very emotional person. For instance, on the BBC documentary, he was defensive and sort of, he's known to sort of lose it. And I don't know that there was any misrepresentation of fact in that conference talk. I think that he was careful to say, these men would not have done that. This is his opinion, that Joseph Smith and Hiram Smith would not have gone to Carthage and with their very last words endorse the Book of Mormon if it weren't true. This is all opinion. I didn't hear any misrepresentation of fact other than maybe the source of the book. Someone pointed that out, that it wasn't the actual book, which is not a material fact. It's just that he was holding, I believe, a copy of the original book that Joseph or Hiram had in Carthage. So my answer would be no from my recollection. Someone else might have a different.
We're going to do one more question.
I didn't have very much time yesterday for questions, so if anybody wanted to ask any questions, I did bring the book of Napoleon, or the first, it's called, just so you know, it's the first book of Napoleon. Google has scanned it. It's so the two books, it'll be on the website soon. It's this information is basically like really at the forefront of, I think, some of the ex-Mormon research that's going on. And like I said yesterday, these books are around 60 times more statistically significant than the Solomon Spaulding type of literature and things like that. So it's really neat, I think, if you really want to get to the bottom of what's going on. So if you have any questions, we have found quite a lot of interesting parallels, of course, in just reading it personally, but he's read it. but yeah, if you have any questions, we've gone through over 100,000 books, and there's a lot of answers if you have any questions. So,
I actually have a missionary question.
one of my friends is going on a mission within the next few months, and I don't know yet. She hasn't got her papers, but I'm worried about her starving herself, you know, because they don't give enough money to the missionaries. Are you allowed to send checks straight to them? Will they be intercepted?
That's why my mom sent me a check when I was on my mission, just a gift or something. I was in Japan, so it was like a bad exchange rate, but I don't think there's any restrictions. It's not like there's not like a big conspiracy out there where they're trying to starve missionaries. Missionaries are usually paying their own way, and then the church is trying to help where they can. Yeah, that's how I see it. But she should be okay, I think.
I'd like to add a little something to that. I do believe the church discourages parents from sending extra money, is the way they already put it. And the reason they give is that they don't want one missionary in a companionship to have more money than the other. I think that's a pile of hooey. You know, I do believe all the checks, you know, that come from the church funnel through the mission president. The mission president can decide, does decide how much the individual missionaries get. And we do have some really sick men as mission presidents, in my opinion. And they do, you know, exercise unrighteous dominion. And they really like their elders to be living on the edge because they think it makes them more humble. And so I think concerns, you know, I had two sons on a mission and generally okay experiences, but a couple of really bad experiences that had to do with not being taken care of medically like they needed to be. And one of it was a very serious medical problem. So I'd be concerned. And if you have money to send her, send her, send it to her. You know, they can't control you. We, as members, we always felt like we had to do, you know, what they told us to do, but that's true. And checks. I mean, if you have an address where she's living, you know, you can send money. Okay. It's 11 o'clock, and I think we will cease and desist for the weekend. This has been a great weekend. It was so exciting to see so many people come this year. Last year was kind of a down year in attendance, and we wondered if maybe we were, you know, on the downhill run of ex-Mormon conferences. But we really bounced up again this year, and I think a lot of that was economic last year. So tell your friends about us, and in answer to the questions, I believe, about what you can do, is I'm excited to see the thing in Sedona. I'm glad there's this group. You know, we have said for years that we will help anybody who wants to do something in their area. So if you want to do that and you're not sure how to do it, get a hold of me. I'll be glad to be an advisor and a mentor for anyone who wants to do that. And this is what we would like to see is, you know, things happening all around the United States, and I know some things have happened in England, and so there's a lot we can do, and to be there for each other, I think that's the most important thing we can do. All right, we'll see you next year, and hope you all come.